So those are the three categories I really want to talk about, and I'll dive in on the mask litigation, which really for school purposes got started when Governor Abbott issued GA 38 last summer, which by its terms purported to prohibit any local governmental entity from imposing a mask mandate. Of course, public school districts are local governmental entities. Typically, under Chapter 11 of the Education Code, they have the exclusive authority to govern themselves. So there's already a tension between the issuance of the executive order and Chapter 11 of the Education Code. Now, GA 38 contained provisions that purported to suspend the operation of any law to the contrary. If you were to read that broadly, it would suspend operation of Chapter 11 of the Education Code. It would also suspend any law or ordinance passed by a local governmental entity. Shortly after, as everybody knows, GA 38 was promulgated or issued, litigation commenced. Local municipalities sued the state to bar enforcement. School districts sued the state to bar enforcement. Individuals sued school districts and municipalities to try and compel compliance with mask mandates or to bar enforcement of mask mandates. So you had a wonderful soup of litigation going all different ways. And to make things more fun, the Attorney General began suing school districts to force them to comply with GA 38. It's played out in both the state and federal courts. I want to turn first to the federal front because this case fascinates me. It's the E.T. versus Paxton case, and this has the unique component of being a case that actually went to final judgment. Because it was in federal court, perhaps, and had federal statutes, all the wonderful immunity defenses that I'm so fond of are not in play. And the Western District put this case to bench trial quite quickly and issued a permanent injunction. The other thing that fascinates me about this case is, unlike the state cases that I'm going to talk about, it deals with statutes that are a regular part and parcel of the representation of school districts and public entities. And those are disability protection statutes like Section 504 and the ADA. So this is a case that, depending on how it turns out, could have significant implications for how lawyers advise their clients on the scope of these statutes, and in particular, what's a reasonable accommodation under the ADA and Section 504. As we'll discuss, and as most of you know, the state cases largely deal with Chapter 418 of the Government Code, the Texas Disaster Act, which hopefully one day will not be an everyday part of a school lawyer's practice. But the ADA and the Rehabilitation Act are not going away. In short, this case was brought on behalf of disabled students under the theory that they were more susceptible to significant illness or death because of their disabilities and thus required mask mandates in schools to protect them. The theory was that the federal statutes overrode and preempted the state executive order, and Judge Yackel of the Western District agreed, finding that requiring a mask mandate was a reasonable accommodation under these statutes, and also that one of the federal recovery statutes expressly preempted GA 38 by placing control over COVID response in local governmental entities. So, final judgment, permanent injunction. The upshot of that was GA 38 was not enforceable against school districts. This case did not mandate that a school district impose a mask mandate, but it would certainly free the hands of a school district that wanted to impose it. The Attorney General did something that, as a procedural trick, you need to keep in mind. It seems kind of strange, but they asked Judge Yackel to stay his own injunction pending appeal. Having just issued a thought-out and written opinion, one would think that would be a futile action, but in the context of procedural tricks and procedural lessons, if you're going to appeal something and you want the Court of Appeals to stay the injunction pending appeal, if you're in federal court, ask the district court to stay its own injunction first. It probably won't, but you've at least accomplished an important procedural step before going up to the Fifth Circuit. The Attorney General took the case to the Fifth Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit issued an opinion staying the injunction pending appeal, which made the injunction of no force in effect pending the appeal. Now, the opinion was fairly lengthy, and it discussed, analyzed, and in many respects dissected the district court's opinion. I do not expect the district court's opinion to survive the Fifth Circuit, because the Fifth Circuit, in its stay opinion, focused on the nature of an accommodation under the disability statutes as something that must be reasonable, and that it's not a one-size-fits-all accommodation. There's any number of accommodations that must be considered, and any number of potential range of options. And so the Fifth Circuit essentially held that this was too heavy-handed and the judge overreached in terms of defining what is a reasonable accommodation. Now, if the Fifth Circuit ultimately holds that the Western District got it right, I think it changes the scope of what's a reasonable accommodation going forward, because even after COVID ends, if COVID ends, we will always have amongst us immunocompromised persons who can take the position that they need an accommodation to protect them from an increased risk of disease or injury. So there's a pretty interesting tension there. How far do you read those statutes? The reading that the Western District gave them, I think, was quite a bit broader than what courts have given before, where accommodation is an interactive process, it's individualized, and it's from a range of options and doesn't necessarily require the public entity to pick the accommodation that the plaintiff demands. So there's a little bit of an inversion going on there. This is also one of those cases that's in the new F4th, which was kind of fun to observe that F4th has come to us and makes me start to slightly feel old. So watch this case. My prediction, and I said I'd make some and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that the Western District is going to get reversed. The Fifth Circuit's opinion does have some great language about standing and a bunch of other topics that are of interest, but just focusing on the effect, watch the case. Oral argument's been held this month. Who knows how long it'll take? The average seems to be about 3 months to affirm after oral argument and about 4 months to reverse. They typically go longer when they're reversing, but those are just averages, so we can't draw much from them. There's been other federal litigation, of course. Some of it's noted in the paper. There's sort of a tag-along case in the Western District that was filed right after this that involves a number of school districts that really there shouldn't be jurisdiction or venue in the Western District, but that case is kind of stalled, and it was largely premised on the Western District's holding in the ET case.